So this is the first lecture on the endocrine system. And I begin by talking about communication. It's really the key to life. The better the communication, the more sophisticated the animal. Let's compare two animals, a jellyfish versus a giraffe. Okay? I can attest to the fact that jellyfish are not that sophisticated. I just swam with jellyfish last week during our February break. I was in a marine lake in Micronesia, and there's this population of jellyfish that have lost their ability to sting. And so you can just swim with them. And so we were swimming with them. There's like hundreds and thousands of these jellyfish. And so I was able to play with them and watch them. You know, it's really neat. And I realized, you know, after about 10 minutes, these things really aren't that smart. You can just, all they do is just kind of beat their bell, I guess it's called, and they move in different directions. But they don't really, what's that? They're about, you know, maybe the size of my fist. The little ones, you know, obviously are very, very small, but the average size is about the size of my fist. Well, they can be bigger as well. And but they're just not that sophisticated. Obviously, giraffes are a mammal, very sophisticated. You can compare societies like Europe today versus Europe in the Middle Ages. And we, you know, when we say better communication, it's not a value judgment. It doesn't mean better in terms of value. But it does mean that an animal or a society can do more sophisticated and complicated things the better they can communicate. And as we know, human societies have many different ways of communicating. We've got regular mail, you know, known as snail mail now, right? We've got email, we've got a telephone, we've got talking face-to-face. I mean, there's all other kinds of ways of communicating I haven't even put down here. And then, of course, there's even nonverbal communication. In fact, the cool thing about nonverbal communication is that many people say that you transmit more information nonverbally than you actually do verbally. It's kind of interesting. And we do a brain unit at the end of the year, and if someone wants to kind of pick up on this and do a whole presentation on the neuroscience of nonverbal communication, that would be a very cool topic. No one's ever done that, but I'd like to see that done perhaps this year. Okay, so there are two communication systems in animals, basically, that I'm going to talk about, you know, this unit. The endocrine system, and of the two, it's the slower. And I would say it's more similar to regular mail because it shares a common infrastructure with other systems. So, for example, we know that the mail system uses roads. But the mail system shares roads with other, you know, like, there's all kinds of other things that are transmitted on roads, right? Mail's just one of them. And that's similar to the endocrine system. It uses the circulatory system, but there's lots of other things that use the circulatory system. We've got white blood cells travel through the circulatory system, red blood cells, we've got plasma protein, you know, on and on and on. Okay. If we look at the system, there's three parts to it. First of all, there is the endocrine cell. And the endocrine cells, as you see illustrated here in my picture to the right, these cells produce and release a chemical message. This chemical message has a special name. It's called a hormone. It then enters part two of the system, which is the circulatory system. And the circulatory system is nothing more than a pathway to carry this chemical message to other cells. Finally, the third part of the system is what is known as the target cells. And the target cells have receptors to this chemical message, to this hormone. And there, it turns out that only the target cells will respond to this hormone because they have the proper receptors. So even though the hormone is released by this endocrine cell, this hormone or chemical message doesn't go to every cell in the body, only the cells that have the specific receptors for the specific hormone or chemical message. Does that make sense to you guys? So that's interesting. Communication system two is the nervous system, and of the two, it's the faster. I would say it's similar to the telephone system, and it has its own special infrastructure, just like the telephone system does. The telephone system has its own special wires, poles, switching stations, and so forth. And this system, the nervous system, has its own special system of nerves and ganglia and so forth. There's three parts to this system as well. There's the nerve cell, also known as the neuron, Those are synonymous terms, and we'll go into the anatomy and the details of neurons a little bit later this week. The nerve cells produce and release a chemical message, and we call this chemical message a neurotransmitter. And you can see a nerve cell here in my illustration, and the little blue things that are being released at the end are neurotransmitters. The second part of the system is called the synapse, and the synapse is a very narrow space between two nerve cells. And then the final part of the system is the final nerve cell. So you literally go from nerve cell to nerve cell, and then there's a space in between called the synapse. And that is the basically kind of how the nervous system works. And the nerve cells, similar to the endocrine system, they have special receptors that are sensitive to the neurotransmitters. Okay? Let's do a quick summary here. The endocrine system is the slower of the two communication systems. The chemical messenger is the hormone, and it is chapter 45 in our current textbook. The nervous system is the faster of the two communication systems. Its chemical messenger is called a neurotransmitter, and it's chapter 48 of our textbook. So that's just a quick summary of kind of where we're going for the next week. Now, I want to say one thing about this before I move on. One of the things, my job as a teacher, one of my jobs is to try to connect things for you guys. I just don't want to be a disseminator of information. I want to kind of let you guys see broader categories of patterns. And so what I'm doing today and in this unit is I'm trying to highlight that it's, some teachers will just go, oh, I'm going to teach you all about the endocrine system and hormones and blah, 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 blah. And then, later they go, oh, now I'm going to teach you about the nervous system, blah, 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 blah. And they don't really show you the similarities. What I wanted to do, in this unit is to say, hey, guys, these two systems are really doing kind of the same thing. They're just doing communication between cells. They're just doing it in slightly different ways. But as you'll see, they probably are evolutionarily related to one another, okay? So I want to show you kind of the bigger pattern here. So don't think of endocrine and nervous as totally two separate systems. They're kind of, they overlap. Kind of neat. So if we look at the endocrine system's chemical messengers, we find out that there's three different families of hormones. There are proteins, or, otherwise known as polypeptides, and we know that these are not lipid-soluble, okay? And it turns out that they bind to receptors on the cell surface. So if you look at, this is a nice illustration I have here. It's from another book, not our textbook, but I really like it because it summarizes everything I'm going to say in these two slides so quickly. If you look at the polypeptide, which is illustrated here in green, we know that a polypeptide is just a bunch of amino acids connected together. And if you look down here, you'll see a lipid bilayer, and you'll see there's a protein embedded in the membrane. We call it a membrane-bound protein, and it is the receptor for this particular protein. There you go. Okay? So the second family of hormones, the first one, of course, is proteins. The second is amino acids or amino acid derivatives, and they also are not lipid-soluble, or at least most of them aren't, and they, too, bind to the receptors on cell surfaces. And so if you look at my illustration below, what you'll notice is you'll see these amino acids and their derivatives. And if you look down at the cell membrane, you'll see that, yes, indeed, there's another plasma protein, or excuse me, a membrane-bound protein, and you'll see that the amino acid is binding there. So once again, it binds to the cell surface. And then finally, the last category, it's on the next slide, are steroids. And the steroids are lipid-soluble, and therefore they can bind to receptors inside the target cell. Now, why is that? Why can steroids get inside the cell, whereas the proteins and the amino acids can't? Yeah. They can pass through the phospholipid bilayer because they, too, are a lipid, right? A steroid is a lipid. Now, does anyone remember, if you look over at the lipid here, you'll see this sort of four-ring structure, which is sort of basic, molecule of all steroids. What's that based upon? What common molecule are all these steroids based on? I'll give you a hint. It is found in cell membranes, and I'll give you another hint. It causes problems with our cardiovascular system. Yeah, cholesterol, exactly. Cholesterol is a molecule that's based on the same structure. So cholesterol, steroids are all based on the same basic background molecule. Okay, but you can see that it's the steroids slip through the membrane and they bind to the receptor inside the cell. Okay, so let's do an overview of the endocrine system. On the next slide, you will see a person, and you can see through his skin into his body, kind of creepy. But what's cool about this is you will see all the different endocrine glands. And it was once believed that these were all separate from one another. They kind of did their own thing. They produced their own hormones, which affected their own specific target cells. So let's just go through and make sure we're familiar. The pineal gland is up in the brain. The hypothalamus is in the brain. The pituitary gland is in the brain. So those three are up in the brain. The thyroid gland is in your neck, and the parathyroid is also in your neck. The thymus gland is underneath your sternum, your breastbone. The adrenal glands are on top of your kidneys. The pancreas, well, there it is. And then the ovary and the testes. So those are your major endocrine glands, okay? And we used to think that they were kind of just separate, doing their own things. But it turns out that in the 1950s, it was determined that the pituitary gland, that little gland in the brain, produces hormones that influence many other endocrine glands and tissues in the body. And for this reason, they actually said, hey, this is the master gland of the endocrine system. And so that was pretty cool. But then they did more research, and by the late 60s and early 70s, they were able to show that the pituitary gland itself was influenced by another gland just above it in the brain called the hypothalamus. And so really, the hypothalamus would maybe be considered the true master gland. Although I still think people, even to this day, consider the pituitary kind of the master gland of the endocrine system, and then the hypothalamus can influence the pituitary. If you, what's kind of cool is this research shows that there's this strong link between the nervous system and the endocrine system, because here you are in the brain, which obviously is nervous tissue, but that's where you've got your endocrine system as well, the master gland at least for it, and so these two communication systems can actually talk to one another. And if you see in my illustration, you've got the hypothalamus influences the pituitary, but look at this, the pituitary influences bones, mammary glands, testes, ovaries, thyroid, adrenal cortex, and kidney, uterine muscles, all these different things and more. Okay? Good. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start out by talking about the pituitary gland. And that's pretty much what I'm going to talk about for the rest of the lecture. And there's a lot to talk about because it's the master gland. If you look at the illustration on this slide, you'll see a cross-section of the brain. And this person, or what used to be a person, is facing to the right. And so that's, you got to get oriented on this. And this is a cross-section of this person's brain. And if you look at where the colored part is, that's where the hypothalamus and pituitary are. And they're at the base of the brain. Now, I want you to look at this. The pituitary is kind of hanging, actually, on a stalk below the brain. It's like a little punching bag. Think about it like that. Okay? That's the pituitary gland. And what's kind of cool is that when I was in dental school for a year at UCLA, we had to take a class called Gross Anatomy. And in that class, we basically dissected a human and a cadaver. And they had taken the brains out of our cadaver before we got there, and we were able to look at the brains later. But when we opened up the skull, it's very cool, you can actually see at the base of the skull, there's a little special place where the pituitary gland resides. It's actually sort of a little neat place down there, and it fully protects the pituitary gland. And so that's where it sits. And what's interesting is right above the pituitary gland is the hypothalamus. But if you think of the word hypo, what does hypo mean? hypo. Kind of means less or below. So if the hypothalamus is there in the brain, where do you think the thalamus is? Right above it. So the thalamus is a region in the brain right above the hypothalamus. The hypothalamus is below it, and it's oftentimes, depending on who you are, some people will call the hypothalamus the base of the brain. Other people will call, you know, the pituitary gland the base of the brain, or some people just call it an extension of the brain or whatever. You know, it, because it's sort of somewhere in this, you know, gray zone between the endocrine and nervous system, it's hard to even say what it is. But anyhow, what they've done, if you look at this illustration, we've divided the pituitary into two parts because there's two, they're two really different parts. The front part here facing forward is the anterior half of the pituitary gland, and the back half is called the posterior. So you've got the, what's called the anterior pituitary and the posterior pituitary, okay? We're going to begin by talking about the posterior pituitary. And what's interesting, and I want you to look carefully at my illustration because this will really help you get it. Look at that cell that begins in the hypothalamus and works its way all the way down through the stalk and ends up down here at the in the posterior pituitary. That cell is called a neurosecretory cell. Okay? And here's what happens. Kind of neat. Up in the hypothalamus, the hormones are made. And those hormones are then transmitted through inside the neurosecretory cell down to the base of the neurosecretory cell, where they are then released from the posterior pituitary into a bunch of capillaries there. Does that make sense to you guys? You guys see that? Everybody? Okay, good. Now, what are these hormones? Turns out there's two. There's only two hormones that are associated with the posterior pituitary. That's why I begin with, because this is the simpler of the two. One is antidiuretic hormone. You guys remember this? We already learned about this, right? ADH. Let's just make sure we can say this. Antidiuretic hormone. Good. What does it do? Can anyone remind me? What does antidiuretic hormone do? Yeah, it prevents you from peeing. Okay? So the word, when I say the word diuretic, what do I mean? What is a diuretic? Something that's a diuretic. What does a diuretic cause you to do? Yeah. Yeah. It causes you to produce a lot more urine. That's what it does. And then when you produce a lot of urine, you got to get rid of the urine. Okay? So antidiuretic prevents you from producing urine. And so how does it do it? Remember, it acts on the collecting ducts in the kidney to help increase water retention. Okay. So some of you this morning got up, I'm sure, and you drank coffee. And we know that both coffee and alcohol are diuretics. And so if you happen to drink coffee, and hopefully no alcohol this morning, your bladder is probably full, okay? And or maybe during the 10-minute break that you took care of that problem, okay? But antidiuretic hormone is what's going on there. Okay. Oxytocin. Can everyone say that for me? Oxytocin. Oxytocin. Now, oxytocin is interesting. It's a hormone that causes the smooth muscles of the uterus and the mammary glands to contract. Now, we haven't done muscles yet, but let me give you like the 30-second quick overview of muscles. There's different kinds of muscles, but two of the main types of muscles in our body are skeletal muscles and smooth muscles. Skeletal muscles are muscles that you can consciously control with your brain. So if I take my hand and I hit my forehead, I told my hand to do that, and my hand hit me in the forehead. And I can keep doing it again and again and again because my brain is telling my muscle to contract. Okay? That's a skeletal muscle. There are muscles in your bodies that your brain can't control. And they're in different places, but they're called smooth muscles. And so women who, they have smooth muscles around their uterus, and they can't sit there, you know, women can't sit there and go, I think I'm just going to contract my uterus. You know, they just can't do that, okay? I'm sorry. You have no conscious control over that. It's all done, you know, in what we call involuntarily. But if you're going to have a baby, oxytocin is released from your posterior pituitary, and that causes your uterine muscles to begin contracting. You go into labor, and you eventually deliver a baby. Now, once you've delivered that baby, you've got to feed the baby. And so you're making milk in your mammary glands, but the milk has to get out of your mammary glands. Your mammary glands are surrounded by smooth muscle as well, and the same hormone, oxytocin, causes contraction of those mammary gland muscles, those smooth muscles surrounding the mammary glands. And what happens is what is called milk letdown, and that releases milk from the breast, and the baby can nurse. So that's what happens with oxytocin. Yeah. That's a good question. I'm sure there's ways of controlling. I don't know the specifics of how that works in terms of, like, let's say you've got the, are you contracting your uterus and contracting your mammary glands at the same time, because you're releasing oxytocin, or is there local control? I imagine there's some kind of local control going on. I'm not sure how that works, though. That's a good question. Very good question. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's right. That's a great question. If you think about it, you've got this huge thing inside of you, and you need more than just your smooth muscles. You need to put everything into it you can, and so it's a big deal. And so, they might be able to produce. Yeah, no, you're gonna have to work. You're gonna have to work at it. Okay, sorry, Sarah. Not that easy. Good idea, though. Okay. You guys maybe have heard of oxytocin as being the love hormone. Have you ever heard of this? Okay, you may have heard of this. So it also promotes, and they've done a lot of research on this more recently, and I don't go into this in this lecture, but you can go on the internet and find out about it. But it certainly produces bonding between the mother and the child. So you figure when the mother is going through labor and then going through nursing, she's obviously producing a lot of oxytocin, but that's also facilitating an emotional bond between her baby and herself. And so that's, it's kind of known as the bonding hormone as well. And there's more on the internet about that. Okay. Now we're going to zip up to the anterior lobe of the pituitary, and this is crazy. The posterior lobe's pretty easy. The anterior lobe is, look at this. What you'll see here, well, first of all, look at the neurosecretory cells. What do you notice is different about them from the posterior pituitary? Take a look at my illustration. What do you notice? Anyone notice something different? Yeah. Okay. That's true, but there's something else. Look at it anatomically. What do you notice about it? What do you notice? Anybody notice something? Just take a close look compared to the posterior pituitary situation. Okay. Well, if you looked carefully, you would notice that the neurosecretory cells begin in the hypothalamus, and what do? They end in the hypothalamus. They don't go down through the stalk of the pituitary. They don't actually end up in the pituitary at all. Very interesting. So this is how they are fundamentally different. So you need to learn this. So here's what happens. This is kind of cool. In this system, the hypothalamus will produce hormones in the neurosecretory cell, and they'll release those hormones up in the hypothalamus. Well, those hormones go into the capillary bed surrounding them up in the hypothalamus. Then they move all the way down through the stalk of the pituitary, and they sort of bathe the anterior pituitary with these hormones, and then the anterior pituitary will now release its hormones. So there's like a two-step process here. Do you see that now? Now, what I want to point out a couple of anatomical things that are very important for you to know about. Up here in the hypothalamus is a capillary bed. The actual circulatory system that connects the capillary bed from up here, the hypothalamus, and the pituitary, these are called portal vessels, okay? Portal vessels. Now, here's something you should know. Anytime you connect a capillary bed with a different capillary bed, the vessels that do that are called portal vessels. And there's several portal systems in the human body. This is one of them. So you should know this because this could appear in a test. Just a warning, FYI. Okay? Now, let's get down to the really important stuff. The actual anterior pituitary will then release, look at all these hormones, growth hormone, prolactin, follicle-stimulating hormone, luteinizing hormone, thyroid-stimulating hormone, ACTH, MSH, endorphins. Oh, my goodness. It's working overtime. That's why it's called the master gland. This whole thing is called the master gland. It produces all these hormones. Now, we're going to go into more detail into all this stuff over the next several days, but I want to, you know, help sort out this massive information. And what I'm going to do for you is I'm going to categorize these hormones. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. There's actually 8 because there's these two. There's 8 hormones here. I'm going to separate them into 2 groups of 4. And it's kind of a cool thing, so check it out. It turns out that a tropic hormone, I'm going to categorize the 4 of the hormones as tropic hormones. So a tropic hormone is a hormone that has another endocrine gland as a target. It doesn't just go out to the body and affect cells. It actually affects another endocrine gland. And therefore, for each tropic hormone, you need to ask yourself, what endocrine gland does it affect? So let's look at it. Let's see if you guys can guess this one. The gonadotropins. What do you think the gonadotropins affect? Yes. What's that? Testes and ovaries. The gonads, exactly. Can everyone say that? Gonadotropins. Good. So follicle-stimulating hormone is a gonadotropin, and it influences the release of hormones from the gonads, both the ovaries and the testes. LH, or luteinizing hormone, and by the way, let's say these. Follicle-stimulating hormone, everybody. Okay, luteinizing hormone. Very good. And luteinizing hormone increases, influences the release of hormones from the gonads as well, ovaries and testes. So both of these do that. And we'll get into more detail about this when we get into the reproductive system. TSH, thyroid-stimulating hormone. Everybody. It regulates the release of thyroid hormone from the thyroid. And remember, the thyroid is in your neck. You really can't feel it. It's there. It's on top of your trachea, and it releases, thyroid hormone. We'll talk more about that in the next couple days. ACTH. Okay, this is a tongue twister. This is the hardest word to pronounce all day. So let me break it down for you. If I break it down for you, you'll all be able to pronounce it. Let's do it word by word. I'll say it first, and then we'll say it together. Adrenal. Okay. Cortico. Tropic hormone. So you see, there's really 3 words in there. It looks like a big gobbledygook of words, but it's actually adrenal, corticotropic hormone. Adrenal, corticotropic hormone. Everybody, adrenal, corticotropic hormone. Very good. Now, do it on your own. All together. I'll say it first, you say it after me. Adrenal, corticotropic hormone. Beautiful, okay? ACTH for short. Now, what does it do? It stimulates the production and secretion of steroid hormones from the adrenal cortex. Hence the name. Kind of cool. Now, let's do a word derivation. Can you break it down for me? Look it. Adrenal. What does that make you think of when you see the word adrenal? Yes. What's that? Why? Renal. You see, very good, Maggie. You see renal in there. And so it refers to the kidney. What does ad mean? On the kidney. It turns out that this hormone affects a gland that is sitting on top of the kidney. And it's called the adrenal gland. on the kidney gland. Okay, kind of cool. So we'll talk more about that. So those are our four tropic hormones. Now let's do the non-tropic hormones. Number one, growth hormone. And the growth hormone stimulates the liver to produce insulin-like growth factors, IGFs. Okay? Now, interesting thing. When you're going through your developmental process, you need growth hormone. If you don't get it, you don't get enough of it, you look like the people in The Wizard of Oz, the Munchkins. Okay? Now, there is a company here in the Bay Area, and one of their very first bioengineered products was growth hormone. And what they did is because growth hormone is actually a protein, and we know that proteins are coded from the what? DNA. What they did is they took the DNA segment from humans that codes for growth hormone, they bioengineered it into E. coli bacteria, then they cloned, let it asexually reproduce, and they have huge vats of this E. coli, and it would just crank out tons of human growth hormone, and then they would purify this protein, put it in little vials, and sell it to people that needed it so that they wouldn't become munchkins, okay? And they have turned out to be one of the most successful biotech companies in the world. Anyone know the name of it? Genentech, exactly. Yeah, they're all doing stuff. Okay, prolactin. Prolactin is another non-tropic hormone. It causes milk production. Don't get confused. What's the other hormone that deals with this? Oxytocin. But what does oxytocin do? It contracts the smooth muscle around the mammary glands and lets milk come out of the breast. But this is the hormone that causes the mammary glands to actually make the milk. So don't get confused by those. Okay, next one, MSH. Melanocyte-stimulating hormone. Oh, by the way, say prolactin. Okay, melanocyte-stimulating hormone. Please say that. Okay, its secretion causes a dramatic darkening of skin in fishes, amphibians, and reptiles by increasing the pigment or the production of this dark pigment called melanin. Everyone say melanin. And it's in these special skin cells called melanocytes. Everyone, melanocytes. Okay. If in humans, melanocytes, these special cells, are responsible for moles, freckles, and when we get a suntan, they, our melanocytes darken. It's also if these melanocytes, these skin cells with melanin, if they go cancerous, we get a cancer called melanoma, very deadly. You want to be careful about too much sun exposure. So always protect yourself from UV rays. Okay. It also seems to have some effect on appetite suppression in humans, although the details are not yet clear. Finally, endorphins. These influence pain receptors in the brain. It actually inhibits pain from these receptors, and we call them natural opiates. They're like morphine and heroin. And people that do a lot of running, if you run a lot, then you will naturally cause the release of these endorphins in your brain. And it's what's known as the runner's high. That's why people get addicted to running. And it makes sense because it's like morphine. It's like heroin. You're producing it in your brain yourself, and you just got to get it. How do you get it? You got to run a bunch. And so you go run so you can get your little drug thing each day. Okay? Do we have any big runners in here? Nobody, okay? So no drug addicts. Okay, good. Okay. But it's natural. Okay, so it's legal to do this. You can run as much as you want and produce as much endorphins as you'd like. Okay, it's legal. Good. So I'll tell you, the quiz on this is challenging. You have a lot of new terms to learn. You got to be able to spell them. You got to know you got to know where they're released from. You got to know what they do. You guys, it's cool stuff though. It's your body. This is stuff you're going to know for the rest of your life. So spend the time, learn it well, and just have fun on the quiz rather than be stressed out, okay? Good.